Saturday, June 15th, the last day of our filming. We'd moved into the den, got started in mid-morning, and I recited my little stories of the piece of needlework that was done by the daughter of not one Texas governor, but two, and the great slab of a coffee table that had come from an oak that had grown in Sherwood Forest for 1,400 years, and the painting of the wild turkeys that all the hunters looked at and said, four gobblers and one hen. The deer head that had the red nose at Christmas time, and all the accumulation of nearly 34 years of married life make this room, as all the others, a mosaic of our life and travels. And it all went rather well, I thought, for all that I was plunged into a state of nervous disorder when I had heard on Thursday that Lyndon was coming, and had thought that this filming with him in the house would be pandemonium. He has been very considerate. We have simply taken over room after room, disrupting life and traffic and hospitality, silencing the vacuum cleaners, the business communications, and even the omnipotent telephone, and banishing everybody from the premises except those connected with this filming. And Lyndon has been very understanding, and Marie so helpful. And all our friends are pitching in, inviting us out to dinner for the Morsons last night and the Winters tonight and the Crims tomorrow noon. So I have relaxed. And now Tony Loeb tells me that we've got to think about how we're going to end it, and that it could have so much more dignity and importance and interest if we get Lyndon to come into the scene and just reminisce about what this house, this land, this way of life means to him. Quaking, I presented the idea to him because he didn't come here to get offered more work, but for escape from work. And this is work for him. But he agrees, yes, after he's had his nap and gets up, 4:30 or sometime after then, he'll do it for 30 minutes. Billy Graham and one of his chief assistants drives out for lunch. I believe it was Grady Wilson. He's here doing a brief crusade in San Antonio. It was a surprise to see him so soon again, but I liked having him in the setting that is our real life. Having finished with the dining room, we ate a proper lunch. Mary's good homemade soup and hot cornbread and buttermilk and salad and peaches and cookies. And when I told them we were having a very light country-type lunch, Mr. Wilson laughingly said, well, Billy preached a sermon on gluttony, so this ought to suit him fine. A little after two, we went out to the airport, Lyndon and I. There at the south runway, the plane rolled up. Linda and Arthur and Matilda and Matilda's father and Daphna and two young men, a cousin, Donald Krim, and his friend, both in law school at Columbia. I took Linda Bird back and got her settled in my room. And then, by 3 o'clock, I was back in the study, continuing our filming. We worked hard, without interruption, until 6 o'clock, with me taking occasional quiet detours to see when Lyndon would join us. He couldn't get loose from the phone. Finally, about 6:30, dressed in his khaki ranch clothes, and after just the briefest run-through by me on what the filming had been like, the story we were trying to tell, and what we hoped he would add to it, he came in while I was in mid-sentence on camera and joined me sitting on the sofa and launched into a long, quiet, philosophic discourse on this country, his growing up years here, why he'd wanted to come back, what it meant to him. It was really charming. Somewhat repetitive, yes, but some great phrases. Warm feeling. Not for a minute did my interest flag. Finally, he quit and said simply, is that enough? Simone was actually in tears, and Tony Loeb's face looked excited, and he said, that's great, that's great. We've got something good. I feel sure he can cut it and tailor a good piece from it. And then they took pictures of us, Lyndon and I, walking out the door and down the walk through the front gate and then paralleling the fence, heading west toward the guest house, with the camera looking into the sunset down the river. And then we were finished, though not the film crew, because after taking off tomorrow, they'll no doubt work Monday and most of Tuesday, probably into Wednesday, on both interior shots and outside. We all elected to go to the Winter's house by car, which pleased me. And Lyndon and I and Marie and Doris Kearns left about 7:30. Linda was washing her hair, and she would come later, hopefully bringing Simone. And we drove to the Diamond X Ranch in the loveliest time of day, in the loveliest early summer I can remember. The weather is a dream, and just to be alive, the greatest joy. Lyndon was giving Doris Kearns little pictures of his growing up times here. The family, where he went to school, a junction and an Albert. We drove up to Melvin and Nita's place a little past 8, and there was an enormous party. Liz and Les and their son and daughter-in-law and her sister, our four, and soon Linda and Simone, and Arthur and Matilda and Mr. Gallant, Matilda's father. I was enchanted to find later in the evening that Simone and Mr. Gallant, who is pretty well cut off from everybody around here because he cannot speak much English, were chatting away animatedly in French, and the Morrisons, and Melvin and Nita's daughter, Joyce, and some 5 or 6 others. It's a thoroughly delightful place, fixed up in the beginning as a sort of a dude ranch, a hunting resort and game preserve. All the interior cedar, they smell delicious. Bunk beds, card tables, delightful pictures by a local artist who lives right over in Willow City, of deer and wild turkey and quail and paisano, and a big fireplace, and mounted heads all over the wall, included a mounted golden eagle, which Nita explained to me they should not have killed, but it had been killing little sheep and little goats, and they shot it just as they would any of several kinds of eagles that are not rare, and discovered afterward that it was this kind that conservationist hope will be protected. How like Melvin, good citizen that he is, to even mind that he had shot something that had been destroying his stock. I could not bear to lose the glorious daylight, and so I started off on a walk with Linda Bird and Les, and we went about a 30 miles, I suppose, through the most beautiful country. Rolling hills, a stream, meadows dotted with huge live oaks. We passed the biggest live oak I have ever seen in this country, and there was a sign that said, "Giant live oak, 17 feet diameter." We could see the antelope in the distance, a big herd of them. Melvin says he has had no trouble raising young ones as we have. They were bounding along up a hillside, a beautiful throat-catching sight. And the grass was so high that you could occasionally just see the head of a deer sticking over the top of it. It was a glorious evening. This sort of life to me is truly a day of wine and roses. Back at the house, we went into the yard where there were ample tables spread out under the trees, or else you could sit inside with the air conditioning if you preferred. I chose the outside. Melvin had on his big apron and was busy frying the fish, although there was ample help to do it. And there were soon great golden mounds of it, and Nita called us to dinner. The buffet inside was spread out on a long counter, catfish and fried potatoes and slaw and tomato slices and hush puppies, absolutely delicious. And for dessert, coffee and cookies, Fig Newtons, which Nita and I share liking for. I remember it from my childhood. After we had all eaten as much as we could and far more than we ought, the men got down to the serious business of the evening, their domino tournament. Linda and A.W., the perpetual partners, and the opposition changing from time to time. Melvin, Arthur, John Hill, whatever victims they can find. Linda and I got Mary Ellen and Joe Beth Hill, and we found an attractive game room. I am tremendously impressed with the skill with which this place has been put together. And we had a bridge game, which went on for about 2 delightful hours. And then, growing sleepy and having the excuse of Linda, I thanked Nita and Melvin and kissed Linda goodbye. And Linda Bird and I slipped away a little after 11:30 and were at home at the ranch in bed a little past 12. However, not to sleep, Linda Bird must write Chuck, and I read the papers for a long interval. But one of the main aims of being at home has been to rest. I cannot say I have done a great deal of it, and Linden so much, much less. This is the 3rd night of the domino tournament, and it does not let up, and they play until 2 o'clock and do not get to bed until 3 or later. But who's to say which is more relaxing, pleasure or sleep? At any rate, Linden is making his own rules.